It's just plain wrong that getting a good night's sleep is so hard. You know, sleep doesn't have to be this hard.
There is a faster way to get better sleep. Sleep Takeout gives you real practical sleep solutions and your questions answered.
I'm Dr. Vaughn, and I'm a licensed psychologist.
And I'm Dr. Satouni, and I'm a board-certified sleep and pulmonary physician.
And we're here to talk to you about sleep advice without a pill.
This Sleep Takeout podcast is for information and entertainment purposes. This podcast is not intended as professional or legal advice.
Podcasts are not treatment. Sleep disorders and mental health conditions need to be individualized with the healthcare provider. Sleep Takeout is not a replacement for professional advice or recommendations.
So help your friends sleep better. Share the Sleep Takeout podcast with them and be sure to rate and review this episode on your favorite podcast app. Welcome back.
Welcome back, Michelle. Oh, girl, the technical difficulties sometimes.
It seems like every time we record, there's something going on.
There is. Although this one is, so for those of our listeners who are following along and appreciating our higher studio sound quality, which I do think is very improved, there's this software they're using, and we recorded an episode, and it recorded all of us, but then it just remembers your part of it. It didn't remember my part.
It's only remembering because we switched like the one and two.
Yeah. So we'll figure it out. I got to do some like
these are learning detective these are learning work. Curves, but you know, sometimes they're good learning episodes.
Absolutely. We're going to be like a pro at this by the end. So that's how we learn. Trial and error. Well, welcome back, Michelle. How are you?
I'm doing great. So I'm working on just getting geared up and back to the routine. I've been out of town, so.
Yeah, there's still a little bit of summer left.
There is summer left.
But it's already back to school time.
Yeah, like, no, but my camping trip should be coming up soon. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy about that.
I had to buy new school uniforms. Because my little one doesn't fit in them anymore. So, and then I'm holding off on buying new shoes because, you know, they just get destroyed. So I'm waiting until right before school.
Yeah, we were doing the trying on for the new shoes, but not getting them yet.
Right. So. You do. You got to go everywhere and test it out, see what you like. So, all right. Well, today we are chatting about morning wake-up routines. I guess that's what we should call it, wake-up routines.
Yeah, but first we have a little bit of a product to review. Mm-hmm. So this is a really nice checklist that came out of a book. Mm-hmm. And we were just going to talk a little bit about the checklist. I think separately we're going to record a YouTube maybe short video about it, just kind of showing you what the whole thing looks like.
Yeah.
But tell me about first the book, and then second about the checklist.
So the book, it's a self-help book that I recommend to a lot of my clients. It's called Mind Over Mood, and there's two editions of it, the first edition and the second edition. So the second edition is what I encourage most people to kind of start with. And what's really helpful about the book, I use it a lot for clients to kind of supplement what they do between sessions with me, primarily because it really reinforces a lot of the concepts. And the number one thing that I really appreciate about the workbook, but also just really the approach of cognitive behavioral therapy, is really the magic, the change that happens for people. It's not what happens in the therapy session. It's what you do in that period of time between the last time you saw me and the next time you come back in. And that's where this checklist really kind of comes in hand, because it really solidifies for you what are skills that you've learned and you feel comfortable with and confident about, and what are skills that you might benefit from just a quick refresher on. So for those of you who have Mind Over Mood, it's actually on page number 282 in the second edition of the workbook. And what it is, it's just a giant listing of, I would say it's maybe 4 pages long of different skills. And it tells you what chapters those skills are in. And it asks you to rate each one in 4 different ways. So the first one is, did you use this skill? Because sometimes you actually don't need to use all the skills that are covered in the workbook. The second question is, how often was it actually helpful for you? The third question is, do you still use this skill? And the reason why this is important is because a lot of times when I'm working with clients and we've made some progress in certain areas, and you feel better, you start, the symptom relief starts to show up because it's not as challenging anymore. We actually forget to do things, like maybe challenging some of these thoughts that might come into our mind, or really trying to find a more alternative, balanced kind of view on something. And then the last question is, do you think that you will use this skill in the future? So another kind of really helpful way to kind of assess. And some of these skills are, you know, just simply noticing your interactions between your thoughts and your moods, your behaviors, your physical reactions in your environment. Great example of that, Michelle, is just like 5 seconds ago when I was like, oh my gosh, I thought I lost the entire podcast recording. Like, and my physical reactions on that were like changes in my heart rate. And then my moods were anxiety because I was like, oh my gosh, that was a really good episode. And it was long. Like we did like 28 minutes of chatting on that one. And then, you know, my thinking was like, crap, what does this mean? Although my thinking was also like, do we want to re-record that one now or again in the future? And I was like, oh, maybe sometime later. So again, a good example of how your thoughts, your moods, your behaviors, your physical reactions can, you know, all intersect each other. What do you think about this when you take a look at this?
Well, now that you're kind of setting the kind of stage for where to implement some of these things, it makes more sense on, you know, your progress. So we're all works in progress. And particularly with sleep, a lot of people will say, you know what, I really don't notice any improvement. But when we get down to really, what are you using? Have you developed these tools? Have you changed them? Have you implemented them? When you actually take a step back, as opposed to being right in the thick of it, you realize you're doing better than you thought.
Absolutely.
And you've learned something about, you know, who you are in the process, and you've learned what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we know exactly what's going to fix the problem, and we just like ignore it. And so I think that some of these just type of things that we talk about, it's really good to say it over again.
Absolutely.
And to kind of re-looking at a chart really helps put things into perspective.
I agree. In fact, thinking of our workshop workbook thing, we could create our own version of the skills checklist, because I think this shows up a lot for especially I see this when I'm talking with sleep clients around their sleep diary. A common pattern that I see is this sawtooth, which really means, you're making improvement and then it drops a little bit. Improvement and then drops, improvement and drops. And it's ideally, it's trending in the right way. But usually what shows up is that when I'm working for a client, after about maybe like 4 or 5 weeks, like they've made some good progress, and then they go on a trip or something big happens, and well, bam, they're like, my sleep is horrible again. It's all of a sudden it's back again. I need more of my gummies. I need more of my,
well, even in your regular life, it's not just about sleep. When you're when you're counseling people, whether it's diet or an exercise plan or just coping strategies, is if you look at everything like it's individual, that this is the first time this ever happened, as opposed to it's a coping strategy, which you've probably had for decades.
Right.
And when you want to start changing it, or at least catching yourself going down that rabbit hole, you can maybe not go down as far.
Exactly. You can kind of, you know, if we think about how those thoughts and moods and behaviors and physical reactions are very connected to sleep, because that's a great example of how they are, is that when you start to feel horrible from a sleep perspective, maybe because there was an acute disruption that leads to thinking. The thinking might be like, oh my gosh, my horrible sleep is back, which then leads to the emotions of that, which is you're like, gosh, I knew what this was like 6 months ago. And all of a sudden you're like, ah, and then the behaviors after that is, what do I need to do? For a lot of us, we try to clamp down on the control part, which this is a common one that I see, of where a client's like, you know, I started going back to bed at 9 o'clock at night because my sleep went horrible. And actually, that's not what you want to be doing with sleep.
It's the opposite.
So, yep.
So what I'm putting a link to the book. You can get it used on Amazon. You can get new versions of it. You can get it in spiral bound. You can get it in hard book. You can get an ebook. So really, I think that you're just pointing out to me, not necessarily that I wouldn't get this book, but that I don't actually need to read the whole book for me to understand what is helpful about it. And I love the idea of a good sticker chart or a checklist, because a lot of times you really just need to see, obviously, where you were and then where you're going. So maybe just kind of charting your progress.
Absolutely. I think another real value of this workbook, and why I use it a lot with my sleep clients, is that for most people, you don't just have a sleep problem. It's usually sleep plus something else. And usually that something else kind of predates the sleep a little bit. And so what's helpful about this is that something else can be, oh, maybe I am kind of struggling with some depression, or maybe I'm in general a pretty highly functional but anxious person. And maybe that's what's kind of amplifying some of my sleep difficulties.
That's important to recognize. You know, when you have something medical going on, or you think it might be medical, or it used to be medical, and you're seeing a medical provider for it, mm-hmm. and it really stems to basically your reactions or your behaviors to things, and it ends up being more psychologic. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, at least that are coming on my side, they want it to be medical because mm-hmm. they want it to be some special thing I can just tell them or remove from them or objectify.
Right.
And it doesn't end up being like that. Mm-hmm. But when you can objectify it with a chart or an awareness, a tracking modality, that right. can be very helpful.
Absolutely. There's nothing like self-monitoring. I think we've chatted about this before too, because we see this a lot in the sleep device kind of area, is that self-monitoring as a psychological intervention is incredibly powerful. And what's interesting about that is that there is no shortcut to doing that. So an app is not the shortcut. A device is not the shortcut. The real power, meaning what we call in psychology, like the effective mechanism of change, is the act of you seeing something, identifying it, and documenting it or writing it down in some way, like recording it. That is the actual thing that causes change, not whether or not your Apple Watch found it or your Fitbit like kept a record for you.
So that gets us right into our topic for today, which is about a wake up routine. And having a good morning wake up is generally my favorite thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know if it's my favorite because it's on the hardest thing for me to work on, because mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily a morning person. But I think that it really is that anchor to improving sleep quality. So we're going to talk a little bit about the wake up routine. So this yes. goes along with, you know, our theme for mm-hmm. the last couple weeks.
Routines.
Has been about routines, and this is on the morning side. So yes. tell me a little bit about why it's important and how to start up with a morning routine.
Yeah, so I would say the morning routine is probably the single most powerful part of what you can do to help improve your sleep. It's not the only thing you can do, but I would say for a lot of people, it's one of the most important things you can do. And I would say, you know, one of the important things that's worth noting here is I want to start with some things to do and some things not to do. So maybe we'll start with the not to do first, because these show up a lot.
That's what we've been doing, the yep. not to do first.
Yes. So I would say the number one thing not to do is to have a variable wake-up time when you're living with a sleep problem. So what I mean by that is, ideally, you want to have a consistent wake-up time every day of the week.
7 days a week, whether or not you're on vacation or mm-hmm. you're working or you're not working, being really consistent with your wake-up time mm-hmm. is setting your biology mm-hmm. to actually go along with the weight of the world. Mm-hmm. And so even when you're on vacation, that time is very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'd say the things not to do not snooze, do not sleep in the morning.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
Yeah.
No, I know it's the right thing to do, but it is very hard when you know, whether it's a sleep problem or that you don't have enough hours to actually sleep because of right. a work schedule or a child schedule mm-hmm. Or a medication schedule. So you end up really wanting to break the rules. But if we can impart on anything to people other than clock watching, which again, it does make up for this whole morning routine, mm-hmm. is make sure that you're being consistent with your wake up time.
Yep, absolutely.
Set an alarm, even if you don't need one, mm-hmm. even if you know you're awake before your alarm, mm-hmm. set an alarm, because absolutely. That's when your day can start.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, one of the other real helpful things that I think is important about a wake up routine is that I really want to dispel this myth that when you wake up, that you're going to somehow be naturally motivated to get started with your day or do that thing that you know is good for you, like maybe exercise, or you're going to, you know, I think we have sometimes this like fantasy about how we wake up and the birds are chirping and we're just going to be like, oh, it's amazing. Like those coffee, like the Folgers commercials from back in the day, you know, the best
part of waking up.
Yes. And there's always that person like waking up in bed and just like stretching and they look amazing. Right. Yeah. No, I don't know anyone that wakes up like that. So I think the most important thing about creating a morning wake up routine is that you already decide what you're going to do. You don't leave a decision point in that morning part. You say, okay, as soon as I wake up, I immediately do this. One of the things you've mentioned before is your, when you wake up, what do you instantly do, Michelle?
So when I wake up, covers off. So
tell me more. What does that mean?
So, you know, your bed is a really cozy place. And mm-hmm. so when you can disrupt your cozy place, your cocoon, yeah. so to speak, at night, mm-hmm. Then that really changes your night versus your day. So the first thing I try and do is get rid of anything on top of me, the covers, the weighted blanket, mm-hmm. the pillows, all of that stuff. You get rid of that.
Luna, does Luna climb into bed with you?
Luna will climb into bed usually at some point during the night, but typically she's a couch potato, so she's usually still asleep on the
Luna
couch.
Luna does not struggle with sleep deprivation. Right?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But the other part that's really hard to motivate is, let's say you don't need certain covers or you have been, you know, sleeping at different places or traveling, you're going to need to do something that you can do everywhere.
Right. So absolutely. Yep.
Covers, like if you normally wear socks, taking off the socks at night. If mm-hmm. you don't normally have socks, maybe there's a pillow that you have underneath your head, but maybe changing that so that mm-hmm. that gets removed from that situation.
Yep, absolutely. So just to recap, things to not do, don't sleep in, don't have a variable wake up time, do set a consistent wake-up time every day of the week. And Michelle, how do we go about setting a consistent wake-up time? What happens if I snooze my alarm once, twice, three times or more in the morning? Like, so what do I do?
If you have broken the cardinal sins of pushing the snooze button once, twice, I mean, you know, sometimes just turning off the alarm entirely, what you end up
I've done that too.
wanting to remember is that this happens. And it doesn't mean that you get to make up for it by going to bed later that next night or taking a nap, mm-hmm. you know, in the day, or not taking a nap because you slept in later. The important part is you still are going to go to bed when you're sleepy.
Right.
And that's going to be at night. And if you find yourself sleepy in the day, mm-hmm. that you're avoiding that extra napping in the day that's going to get you yep. going to bed later.
Absolutely.
So it's important that you remove yourself from your sleeping position whenever you're supposed to be awake. So mm-hmm. if you have hit the snooze button and your alarm's going off for the second or third time, start right then mm-hmm. and just remove yourself from your sleep's yep. position and your sleep situation, even if it means your eyes are closed and you're sitting on mm-hmm. the porch or you're in another room, but get yep. out of that environment where you've trained yourself to sleep.
Absolutely. And I would say another myth I like to dispel, because I hear this a lot, is, but my bed feels so amazing in the morning and I finally have gotten to sleep, so I'm getting some great sleep in the morning when my alarm goes off. So why would I want to ruin that? Maybe I should sleep in for another 2 more hours to catch up on the sleep I didn't get the night before. Why do we not want to do that?
We don't want to do a lot of those type of behaviors because, again, it's justifying why you're going to stay in that terrible routine. Mm-hmm. And it also affects your ability to fall asleep the next night. Mm-hmm. So once you catch that you've done the behavior where you stay in bed, if that's an acceptable time for you where you say, you know what, it's usually an hour later that I want to get up every day, you may have to reassess your nighttime and your daytime wake up, because if it's just not working for you, this happens a lot. You alluded to people who want to start an exercise routine in the day and they mm-hmm. set their alarm clock for 5 a.m. when they know perfectly well that their typical time they get sleepy is midnight. That's not enough hours of sleep. Right. So you may want to reassess that wake up time, but be consistent. Mm-hmm. So if you can't keep up with that wake up time being 8 or 9 o'clock every day because of work or school, you need to work backwards and reassess that situation. Absolutely. It doesn't mean that you subtract 4 hours and get up at 5 o'clock and then always sleep through.
Yep, absolutely.
So be kind.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the goal with all this is you want better sleep quality, not sleep quantity. So the number of hours is not important to your sleep. What's really important is the number of brainwave cycles that your brain's going through. And we know that you do not get the same type of brainwave activity when you sleep in the morning that you do in the night. And so that's another thing too. So back to tips to wake up. So we got up. I know I have a little bit of a hack that I use to get
Tell
up.
Tell me about and start. That.
So what I do two things. Number one, I use my cell phone as my alarm, but I do not charge my cell phone in my bedroom. I charge it outside of my bedroom, actually in the kitchen because I can still hear it. And I have my alarm set there so that I have to physically get up out of bed and leave the bedroom and walk into the kitchen to actually turn off the alarm. That's one of my hacks. It's not the only one, though.
So I want to tell you, not necessarily my hack, but I want to tell you something I heard from a patient of mine. So their hack is they charge their phone in their child's room.
Oh.
And they put the alarm clock on the child's room. And when the alarm clock goes off in the child's room, the child is now allowed to go to the parent's bedroom wake up the parent. So they've actually charged their child with waking them up.
I love that idea. I might do that.
Why they love this is because the child usually is already up. They just are playing with themselves, by themselves. And so now this is a good wake up time because that the child is the motivating factor for the adult.
Wow. That's awesome. Okay.
So you could use this also if your pet maybe is sleeping in the other room in their pet bed.
Yep.
You can almost train your pet to wake you up by putting the alarm clock over there.
Yep.
You could record your voice and where it would be your own voice saying, "All right, come get me."
Yep.
So this doesn't need to be an extra smart animal, but animals can be trained to, when they hear the alarm clock go off, go get their owners.
Which brings me to my second kind of, hack that I use, which is also really important as part of your wake up routine, is to expose yourself to light as quickly as possible. Outdoor light is best. However, I can tell you that smart light bulbs work great for this too. So the hack that I use is actually have... I use the Philips Hue light bulbs and they do like a simulated sunrise if you have the color ones. And you can set how long you want that simulated sunrise to happen. And what I can tell you is that it's fairly effective at making sure that I am waking up. So
The part of taking the covers off is it's not just the covers for me, it's my eye mask.
Yeah. Oh, see, that's an important detail.
But I do get up quite a bit often before the sunlight actually
has come out. Because you have these receptors in your eyes that even if your eyelids are closed, they're still sensitive to light.
Yeah.
And so the more you can expose yourself to that light in the morning, which is the opposite, we've talked about these routines for the middle of the night and going to bed. There you're trying to reduce light. Here you want light. So,
Great tips.
Yep.
The other thing is if there is something that you really, really enjoy in the morning, like whether or not you're learning a language, so you have an app or a nice daytime like meditation or some sort of like positive messaging that you have, is you allow yourself to have that in the morning. So it's part of that getting out of that nice cozy routine, even that you love, and then moving it to something else that you love that you can do in a short period of time.
Absolutely.
But keep it short. Again, you don't really want to wake up and then have this big long routine that you can do when you have hit snooze a couple times.
Yeah, absolutely. So other things that can help you to become more alerting, you definitely want to, so things not to do, don't do things that are like sedentary, like, reading a newspaper or scrolling your phone, in your bed or watching TV in your bed. You want to do things that actually get you up and active. In fact, you could, immediately kind of start doing some physical activity if you wanted to. Some people like to, you could even go to bed with their exercise clothes on so that when they wake up, they just put on their shoes and they walk right out the door.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's a great option for you. There's lots of ways to, and the key thing on this is the more you can increase your cardiovascular activity in the morning, the more alerting kind of signals, again, you're just sending to your body. So that one's awesome improvement, another good one. What do you think about music in the morning? Like an upbeat playlist, like something that's got some good rhythm to it for you?
I love this idea. Again, a lot of people are more attuned to things that they hear. And sometimes even like a blaring bell alarm versus the music alarm can really help motivate you.
Yeah.
Particularly if music does tie to other like positive things that you enjoy with your life. So I think music would be a great thing mm-hmm. to put on there.
Absolutely. Another thing that is really activating that we know from a research perspective, conversation. So starting a conversation with someone, maybe you need to phone a friend, maybe you need to talk to someone else that's in your house, but the more communication you can engage in, again, this is something that involves a lot of brain activity. And that's another alerting kind of thing that you're wanting to be doing. So again,
another plug for singing in the shower.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the more you can engage all these senses. So again, these are the most important kind of pieces of this wake up routine is number one, that you've thought about it before the morning gets here. Number two, you're pushing against that inertia that you have in the morning, which that inertia is to remain sedentary, to remain low key. You actually want to push against that because we know that's better for your sleep quality in the long term. It is not good for, you know, how you feel in that moment, but that's because sleeping in and those experiences are a little paradoxical. They feel good in the moment, but they're not good for your sleep.
It's like a Snickers bar.
Yes. I miss those Betty White commercials. I know. So all these things are helpful kind of pieces, but I would say the number one thing to remember, consistency. So if you did it this morning, excellent. If you forgot it this morning, that's okay. Tomorrow's a brand new day. Just start it again. And the goal is to do as much pre-thinking about your morning routine so that you know what you're doing and don't leave it up to chance.
And this is really important heading into the kind of the start of school when mm-hmm. this episode probably will come out.
Yeah.
Is, you know, if you've allowed your teenager or your younger child to sleep in a little bit longer, really be kind and start setting that routine so that it's not such a wake-up call, like legitimate wake-up call when school
Absolutely.
Starts.
Yep, that'll make it a much easier. All right, Michelle, great tips. Let us know, Sleep Nation, you have any thoughts on this? Or if you want a sleep morning routine wake-up workshop, let us know. We'd be interested in hearing some feedback on that.
Yeah, so. We're still waiting to hear from a few more people on whether or not they would like to connect with us on a different level in person over the next couple weeks. If you can just send us a email to either sleeptampabay@gmail.com or sleeptakeout@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking it has podcast at the word at the end of it, but
no, I think it's just
but reach out to us on any of our platforms that we have, and we would be happy to answer some questions for you and try and see if we can connect more often.
Yeah, and in person. All right, Sleep Nation, until next time.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Sleep Takeout. We hope that you found our discussion on sleep valuable.
Help your friends to sleep better. You can share the Sleep Takeout podcast with them and be sure to rate and review this episode on your favorite podcast app.
Remember, Sleep Nation, sleep well.
Dream big.
And wake up refreshed. Bye.